free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome on this Friday after Thanksgiving, on Black Friday. Many of you will be shopping. Some of you will be traveling, or have been traveling, or will be traveling. I want to take a quick look at the state of our freedom of travel. Now, of course, they're going to take away our freedom of mobility completely before too much longer as they institute their smart cities, their self-driving cars that are owned by one or two corporations. But what is happening to us right now, I think, is very telling. As we look at what is going on at the borders, we have artificial intelligence lie detectors that are being installed in European Union airports and at border crossings. Here in the United States, we have biometric ID for travel. And it is going to be expanding significantly everywhere. This kind of Chinese oppression. Just as the Chinese look at their social credit system and they don't like what you're doing with your dog, you're not curbing them properly, or not obeying certain other regulations, not only will they heavily fine you, they may confiscate your pet. That's right. If you don't walk your dog properly, the government may walk your dog, W-O-K. They may have him for dinner the next day. This is what they do to slaves when you have no rights. And what is happening here in America? Of course, a couple of weeks ago, we had the story, the government wants airlines to delay your flight so they can scan your face. Facial recognition everywhere, not just at the airports. It's coming to the stores near you. Yes, our pre-crime society, Minority Report style facial recognition everywhere you go. But there's a new program, a new report on the biometric entry-exit program that'll be run by DHS and Customs and Border Patrol, CBP. The agency has bemoaned the fact that they've had a little bit of problem with some of these tests, the system that's called Sprint 8. They report that they're frustrated. They said the airlines, for some reason, insist on letting their passengers depart on time rather than subjecting them to Homeland Security surveillance prototype that is plagued by technical issues and slowdowns, reports The Intercept. They said, and this is quoting from Homeland Security's report, they said demanding flight departure schedules posed other operational problems that significantly hampered biometric matching of passengers during the pilot program in 2017. Typically, when incoming flights arrive behind schedule, the time allotted for boarding departing flights was reduced. In these cases, CBP allowed airlines to bypass biometric processing. We observed this scenario in Atlanta Hartsfield Jackson International Airport when an airline suspended the biometric matching process early to avoid a flight delay. This resulted in approximately 120 passengers boarding the flight without biometric confirmation. Repeatedly permitting airlines to revert to standard flight boarding procedures without biometric processing may become a habit that is difficult to break. Let me tell you what is a habit that is difficult to break. Having a slave mentality and losing the foundations of this country. When we look at what has happened to travel in the 21st century, we've had delays, we've had diversions, we've had shrinking seats, we've had shrinking legroom, shrinking microscopic bathrooms. We got slower planes. It is a microcosm of what is coming in smart cities. Micro spaces. No freedom. Complete surveillance by the TSA, the Travel Transportation Security Administration. It's about all travel, not just airplane travel. You know, in the 20th century, planes were constantly getting faster, more comfortable. Isn't it interesting how that has been reversed? Got a British family here, amongst others. They spent 90 hours on their trip, their dream trip to Disney World. They're very frustrated. One two-year-old had to celebrate their birthday trapped on a plane. Might not have been much better if they got to Disney. You know, the Disney just banned for life a guy who was wearing a MAGA cap talking about President Trump. That is the kind of oppression coming to us from corporations who are the iron fist of the government tyranny behind them. We'll be right back.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. You know, I was just talking about how outrageous it is that you get these judges. And the judge orders President Trump. You can't block anybody on Twitter. The CEO of Twitter can do it. He can say it's a public square and he can block people, even though we've had a Supreme Court decision that says you can't block people on the public square. That's their business model. Their business model is free speech. Their business model is a public square. And as I said, the White House is not a public square. Tucker Carlson's house is not a public square. They applauded Obama when he threw people out of his house. That's my house. Get out of here. But not President Trump. Different standard. Let me tell you. Again, President Trump likes Andrew Jackson. President Trump, look at what Andrew Jackson said about the judicial system, even the Supreme Court. Andrew Jackson told the Supreme Court, well, he said, they've made their decision. Let's see them enforce it. There is a separation of power. You don't have to do everything the courts tell you, President Trump. This is not a First Amendment issue. In spite of the fact that Fox News has jumped in on this, it just shows us what Fox News is about. It doesn't say anything about the First Amendment. They never defended free speech for anybody else, but now they're defending it for CNN. Isn't that interesting? I tell you, that establishment media hangs together. They do have their fake, controlled opposition, don't they? Fox News is very much like the controlled opposition of the GOP establishment. Oh, yeah, vote for us. We're different from the Democrats. No, they aren't. People like Paul Ryan, he's always been open borders. He has always been for Obamacare. I mean, that was something that he and Mitt Romney were going to put together. The same thing had been done already by Mitt Romney as governor. And, of course, Paul Ryan, surprise, surprise, who was the running mate of Mitt Romney, he was able to keep that shut down until the Democrats could take the gavel back. That's basically what Fox News is doing as far as the media goes, is what Paul Ryan and the GOP establishment have been doing all along. And, of course, right after the election, as soon as Mitt Romney got elected senator, he's out there putting his creds out. Oh, I love Mueller. Declaring his love and his fidelity for Mueller and the investigation. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to be talking to somebody who was the target of Brennan, who says we've got a constitutional crisis. Yes, we do. We had a constitutional crisis a few decades ago, and this constitutional crisis has gotten worse and worse because the real government in this country is the CIA and the corrupt Department of Justice and FBI. And it's all the same people. Brennan, Mueller, Peter Strzok, all the same people came after CIA whistleblower John Kiriakou, and he's going to tell us that story at the bottom of the hour, so you're not going to want to miss that. As we reported before, we had the Pentagon have their first ever audit, they said. They have had other audits. I mean, we need to audit the Fed. It's a good thing to it's a good thing to audit the Pentagon. This was an audit of a $2.7 trillion organization. So the fact that we did the audit is substantial. Pat themselves on the back. They got $21 trillion they can't find. people died because they had lost trillions of dollars pre-9/11. But hey, that's all right. Did another audit, system-wide audit now, and they failed it. Conducted by 1,200 auditors, examining it on a broader basis. But no problem at all. And one of the things I wish they would explain to us is how the U.S. maybe could audit this. How does the U.S. spend $1.5 million a day to fight Afghan heroin production, and yet heroin production in Afghanistan quadrupled? This is an article from the Free Thought Project. They point out how in 2004, Donald Rumsfeld, as defense secretary, said the danger of a large drug trade poses in Afghanistan is too serious to ignore. The inevitable result is to corrupt the government and a way of life that would be most unfortunate. Well, what he's just described there is the UN global war on drugs. It's a global agenda, and it has corrupted our government, not just the Afghanistan government. And, of course, you had Geraldo Rivera there, surprised to find U.S. troops guarding the poppy fields there. That's one thing they don't point out in this article. They said the U.S. invasion and subsequent operations led to Afghanistan becoming the fourth most dangerous and the fourth most corrupt country in the world. So that's our regime change for you there. How can we come up with a government that's even worse than the Taliban? We just run it into the ground with a state of war for 17 years. The U.S. Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction said from 2002 through September of 2018, the U.S. has committed an average of more than $1.5 million a day to help the Afghan government combat narcotics. You think they really want to combat narcotics? Do you think the Afghan government wants to combat narcotics? Do you think the U.S. government wants to combat narcotics when they guard the poppy fields? And they defended it to Geraldo Rivera. They said, well, you know, these people need to have, that's their economy, you know, so we got to help them. We don't want them to collapse economically. Well, they're not collapsing. Because I said, despite our best efforts, in 2017, poppy cultivation is more than four times that reported by the UN Office of Drugs and Crimes for 2002. The first full year of U.S. intervention in Afghanistan. And the country is the largest source of street heroin for Europe and Canada. They said efforts to combat drugs have cost U.S. taxpayers more than $8 billion since 2002, yet Afghanistan's opium crisis is worse than ever. And so is America's opioid crisis, isn't it? Boy, nothing changes, does it? Are we getting our money's worth? Rand Paul says no. In an interview with Breitbart, Rand Paul had this to say about Afghanistan and about President Trump and his instincts and what is happening in his cabinet to block President Trump. Here's Rand Paul.
I think the president truly believes in an American first foreign policy. I think that some of the people he's surrounded himself with are really more part of the foreign policy swamp that believes that war is always the answer. When I talk to the president, I hear from him that we've been at war too long in Afghanistan. When I talk to him, I hear his initial response, we don't need to now permanently have troops in Syria. I think he truly believes that. I think he believes stronger than almost anything else, and he said it a million times, the Iraq war was a mistake and destabilized the Middle East. And yet he's surrounded by generals who often think we cannot leave or we will lose, or we must take one more village in order to get to a negotiated settlement, or even worse, the neocons who believe, oh, it's going to have to be unconditional surrender, like we had with Japan after World War II. That's rarely the way a war ends. War almost never ends with unconditional surrender. Usually ends with a settlement. And I think in Afghanistan there needs to be a settlement, but the bottom line is I'm tired of spending $50 billion a year in Afghanistan building roads and bridges over there when I'd rather build roads and bridges here.
Yeah, I'm tired of the war on terror, tired of the $6 trillion that we spent on that, foreign and domestic. I'm tired of spending $1.5 million a day in Afghanistan to supposedly eradicate heroin production. I don't know if they're still guarding the fields. They said, well, we blew up some processing plants and so forth. It has skyrocketed. It was about 10% of worldwide production of opiates when the Taliban had it. And now that we're there, it's up into the 90s. And they have record crops every year. But we're going to stay there. We're going to continue to blow up. I don't know that we're building any bridges there. I don't think we're building bridges politically. I don't think we're even physically building bridges there. But we're going to continue to blow that country up as our bridges crumble here from neglect, in the same way that we can't get anybody to the border effectively to do anything about it. We're told, as we look at this, and we're going to take a look at that when we come back, look at what's happening at the border. You know, are we going to build a wall? Are we going to defend the border? Or are we going to move on to a different agenda now that the election's over? Not hearing anything now about anchor babies. Isn't that interesting? Very interesting, I think, that there's no more talk about anchor babies now that we've had the election. And we talk about the so-called caravan or the invasion. These people are pouring over the border. Nothing was done at the places where nobody thought they would come across the border at Tijuana. So nothing was done. Got video of the Border Patrol agents, just a few of them there. Massive crowd, so they couldn't really do anything about it. These people are taunting them. We got Kamala Harris taunting the head of ICE because he said, he was talking about the people who want to shut down ICE. They want to shut down our borders. I mean, this is a problem. This is what the majority of people voted for Trump to do. Welcome back. We're going to take a look at the Mueller investigation. Is Mueller safe?
Lindsey Graham says he is. Lindsey Graham is excited. Yeah, Mueller is staying. He's going to continue on with this thing. I'm going to be talking in the next segment to CIA whistleblower John Kiriakou, who went to jail for exposing the crimes of the CIA. The people who committed the crimes didn't go to jail. He went to jail. And he recently published an op-ed piece saying that what Chuck Grassley said, the chair of the Judiciary Committee, as they're investigating this Russiagate conspiracy. Chuck Grassley was talking about this just before the election, everybody was paying attention, I guess, to Khashoggi or whatever the crisis of the day was. He pointed out that Brennan had ordered CIA hackers to intercept the emails of all potential or possible intelligence community whistleblowers. And that included specifically the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence and Senate Judiciary Committee. And as Kiriakou points out in his op-ed piece, he said, hacking the Senate computer system constitutes illegal use of a government computer, it's illegal espionage, and it is wire fraud. Why are they not being prosecuted for this? Chuck Grassley knows this. Well, maybe it's for the same reason Hillary Clinton doesn't get prosecuted for violating national security. We lay all of our liberties on the altar of national security and worship that false god. And yet Hillary Clinton commits national security blasphemy and gets away with it. Comey says she committed multiple felonies, but no reasonable prosecutor would prosecute her. I guess no reasonable prosecutor would prosecute Brennan and Clapper either. I mean, it's a shame that they even had their security clearance lifted after they retired. I mean, that is a major scandal as far as mainstream media is concerned. They're certainly not going to report the fact that these guys ought to be in jail. We got the inmates running the asylum, or I should say the inmates are running Washington, D.C., because it is an insane asylum in and of itself. So we're going to talk a little bit about updates on that before and lay the background for that before we talk to John Kiriakou about how these same suspects, the usual suspects, Brennan, Mueller, Peter Strzok, tried to set him up. They failed because he's an honest man, so they came after him for other things. It just goes on and on. Before we do, real quickly, I want to remind you of the specials that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. We have 67% off of Silver Bullet, our colloidal silver, and free shipping. We have free shipping store-wide, as a matter of fact, and also 57% off of Super Male Vitality, 50% off Brain Force Plus, and Survival Shield X3 Nascent Iodine, our new formulation of Nascent Iodine. Those are 50% off. And again, free shipping store-wide. We have $123 savings off of the large Alexa Pure water filter, the Alexa Pure Pro. Biggest discount we've ever had off of that. It's typically about $250. You can now get it for just $127. That's a savings of $123, free shipping store-wide. And finally, we have a special just for the listeners of this program. You can save $10 off of an InfoWars Hexagon Polo. Just use the code REALNEWS at checkout to save $10 off of that InfoWars golf shirt with the Hexagon logo on it. We really do appreciate your support. It's all at InfoWarsStore.com, free shipping store-wide. Right, we had Lindsey Graham come out and proudly proclaim that he has met with Acting Attorney General Matt Whitaker. He says, as to the Mueller investigation, I'm confident that it is not in jeopardy. Oh, great. We can run it for another couple of years, right? Nobody ever loses their job, even if it's a job as a special persecutor, which is what Mueller is. Can't say that, he may not have the Mueller investigation in jeopardy, but I can tell you what is in jeopardy. Constitution's in jeopardy. The rule of law is in jeopardy. Due process is in jeopardy. Search warrant, the protections that we have in terms of search warrant, all of that has been in jeopardy for quite some time. And we've discovered now that these people just run roughshod over it whenever they wish. And that's the most dangerous thing. You know, we have the revelations about, the Snowden documents and so forth that come out. To me, we're in a much more dangerous position than we were because all of that stuff came out. It used to be just denied. And as we were telling you that it was happening, as we were telling you that they're spying on you through your phone, we told you they're spying on you through the computer, watching everything that you're doing. They're looking at you, listening to you through the monitor, monitor camera and so forth. You know, we now see pictures of Zuckerberg with a post-it over his camera. Alex Jones used to say, I do that all the time. People, you paranoid conspiracy theorists, they're not listening to you. They're not tracking you. Then we find out that they are. And then we don't do anything about it. And that's where it gets really dangerous. Because that is kind of an implied consent, isn't it? I don't consent. I'm afraid most Americans think that they can trade their liberty and their freedom and their privacy for security. And as I've said many times, to the extent that you give up your liberty and your privacy and your property rights and your other human rights, to that extent that you give up those precious things like your liberty, to that extent you become a slave. Slaves are never safe. They're never secure. And so we got Lindsey Graham saying, oh, well, there's no reason to fire Mueller. I asked him, do you have any reason to fire Mr. Mueller? And he said he's got zero reason to believe anything has been done wrong in the Mueller investigation. Well, let me give you some examples of what's been done wrong in the Mueller investigation. Let's hear it from Rand Paul. Rand Paul thinks that this has gone on too long. And he thinks that we need to be concerned about our individual liberty, not just what's going on with President Trump or Brett Kavanaugh. Here's what Rand Paul had to say. Video 4.
Happy that Attorney General Jeff Sessions is no longer part of this administration?
You know, I think your cabinet needs to have people in it who agree with you. And I think for a long time, Jeff Sessions hasn't really been, you know, working for the president, what the president would like him to do. I also think that there are some big reforms that we need of our justice and our intelligence agencies, and I think justice can be part of that. I think that what they've done to the president has been very unfair with going after his campaign, trying to entrap people. This whole thing, I think, was set up by people in the intelligence community. Some call it the deep state. Yes, these are people that are there forever, and they care more about power and their power than they do about anybody's individual rights. So what I've been encouraging the president is that he needs somebody to be attorney general who actually recognizes what they did to President Trump was wrong, but that it would be wrong if they did it to me or Joe Smith or, you know, Mary Jones. It's wrong if the intelligence community has this much power. So I would love to see somebody as attorney general who actually believes that individual liberty needs to be preserved, and we can't allow the state to grow so large that they can look at all of our phone calls, who we call, how long we call, and even conversations.
That's absolutely true. You know, Dianne Feinstein got very upset with the CIA when they're investigating the torture stuff. She said, they're investigating my staff. They're not supposed to investigate me. Well, you know, that's the way that it works. When you let our basic freedoms, our privacies and so forth go, it's going to be the people who are in positions of power that are going to feel those abuses first. They're going to be the first ones up against the wall when the revolution comes, not from us, but from the other side. And so she found herself under surveillance because they'd overthrown the Constitution. Now you got John Brennan saying, we got a constitutional crisis very soon because Sessions was fired. Every time somebody gets fired, they think that is a crisis because what constitutes government for them is not our Constitution. It is permanent employment of the deep state. We'll be right back with John Kiriakou. Stay with us.
Making sense common again. This is the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. We're connecting with John Kiriakou right now. He's having a little bit of data issues. Surprise, surprise. Maybe I shouldn't have announced that he was coming on our show so soon. We're going to connect with him via phone. We'll have him in just a minute here. And to recap what I was just saying, we've had Lindsey Graham, the guy who famously said, shut up, you don't get a lawyer. Oh, yeah, we're going to continue this Mueller investigation. I've talked to the acting attorney general, and he says he doesn't see that Mueller's done anything wrong. I've looked at Mueller's career. He's got a history of being essentially the bagman for the deep state. And, of course, as Brennan is saying, we're now facing a constitutional crisis. Why is that? Because Sessions got fired. You don't fire anybody there. That creates a constitutional crisis for them. So joining us now is John Kiriakou. And, of course, we've talked to John before. A great deal of respect for John. I mean, not too many people have the integrity to go against a system that they're in. There's a lot of pressure, peer pressure and otherwise, to go along with criminal activity in the CIA. When he saw illegal torture going on, he blew the whistle on it.
and they ultimately came after him. And I want to talk to him now about what he's spoken about in the last week or so, how they came after him and who came after him, because it is, again, the usual suspects. He worked for the CIA for 15 years. He says that he was systematically targeted for revenge by John Brennan and by Bob Mueller. So joining us now is John Kiriakou. Thank you for joining us, John.
Thanks for having me, David. It's always a pleasure.
Well, thank you. Tell us about the persecution, because, you know, you've been looked at, the things that you had said, blowing the whistle on torture during the Bush administration. Nothing happened to you during the Bush administration, but it was during the Obama administration. Who was it that started your persecution under Obama? I'll call it persecution.
Yeah, thanks for that. I think it was a persecution. It was John Brennan. John and I went back to 1990 together. I've known him for 28 years. I've not respected him in that entire period. I always believed that John was...
So you really do know him then.
Oh, boy, do I. He was in over his head intellectually. But as you pointed out, I blew the whistle on the CIA's torture program in December of 2007. The Bush administration investigated me for a full year until December of 2008 and then closed the case and sent my attorneys a declination letter saying that they were declining to prosecute because I had not committed a crime. A month later, when Barack Obama became president, John Brennan became the number two at the National Security Council. And one of the very first things that he did was to ask Eric Holder to secretly reopen the case against me. I had no idea that for the next 3 years, my phones were being tapped, my emails were being intercepted, and there were several teams of FBI agents conducting surveillance on me. We learned in discovery, David, after my arrest, that Brennan had sent a letter to the Justice Department saying, charge him with espionage. And Justice wrote back saying, we don't think he committed espionage. And then Brennan wrote back again saying, charge him anyway and make him defend himself. And that's exactly what they did.
Wow. And as we look at this little spat that's going on in the White House with Jim Acosta, people forget, nobody is talking about the fact that Barack Obama came after more whistleblowers and journalists. He came
and
after
journalists.
Multiple journalists. Yeah, he came after Risen and Rosen, one of them New York Times, one of the other one Fox News. He came after these journalists. And you look at the number of people that are whistleblowers and journalists, it's more than all the previous presidents combined for the 100 years under the Espionage Act. And so they came after you saying, well, we're going to get him for espionage.
That's right. In fact, on the day of my arrest, the Justice Department called my attorneys and said, here's our offer. He takes a plea to an espionage charge and he does 10 years. If he turns it down, he may or may not live to meet his grandchildren. And, of course, I turned it down. I hadn't committed espionage, just like Tom Drake hadn't, just like Jeffrey Sterling hadn't, and you know, all of the other eight of us who were charged by Barack Obama with espionage.
Yeah. And, of course, Drake, they said, oh, you're in possession of classified materials. The stuff that he had wasn't classified.
No.
And it was there was something that they went back afterwards and they classified it, but it was like, you know your enemy or something. It was like some PowerPoint thing for orientation, you know, and they classified it after the fact and then tried to lock him up. And then you got Hillary Clinton, who is running this, this document search program for everybody abroad. and committing all these felony violations, and nothing at all happens to her. But you again, if they had a problem with what you did, and the Bush administration looked at it, what you did as a whistleblower, talking about and exposing the torture program, that was not espionage, right? That would have been a violation of security things or something like that. But he doesn't say get him for that. He says get him for espionage. And then they set a process in motion to try to entrap you into committing espionage.
Oh boy, did they! I've told this story a number of times. I'll tell it again. And it, you know, people that I tell this story to never cease to be shocked by it. I was working as the senior investigator on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee from early 2009 until the middle of 2011. And one of the great things about that job is you get to have lunch with foreign diplomats all the time. You get to talk about the issues that you're most interested in. And it's just a lot of fun. It's intellectually stimulating. So I got a call one day from the number three at the Japanese embassy, and he invited me to lunch. We went to lunch, and his English was so bad, we actually did the entire lunch in Arabic, which was kind of funny. He told me he was a Middle East expert, as I am. So we did the lunch in Arabic, and we talked about Israeli elections and Turkish elections and the peace process and all of those issues of the day. Finally, at the end of the lunch, he asked me what was next for me. And I said, actually, I think I might resign soon. I told the chairman that I would give him 2 years. It's been 2.5. I have 5 kids I need to put through college. And I think I'm going to go to the private sector. And very excitedly, he said, no, don't do that. If you give me information, I can give you money. And I said, I said, shame on you. What's the matter with you? You know how many times I've made that pitch in my career? And I got up and I went directly to the office of the Senate security officer. And I said, I was just pitched by a foreign intelligence officer. So he had me write up a memo and he sent it to the FBI. A couple days later, 2 FBI agents came to interview me. And they said, here's what we want you to do. We want you to call him back, invite him to lunch, and ask him how much money he's willing to pay and what information he wants you to provide. So I did. And I wrote a memo and sent it back to the FBI, and they asked me to do it a second time and a third time and a fourth time, which I did. And then in the final lunch, he told me that he had been promoted and he had gotten his dream job. He was going to go on to Cairo to be the number 2 in the Japanese embassy there. I shook his hand. I never saw him again. Well, a year later, I'm under arrest, and we received discovery from the Justice Department. And we realized from discovery that there never was any Japanese diplomat, that he was an FBI agent undercover trying to get me to commit real espionage. But I kept reporting the contact back to the FBI in these memos. And I'll tell you, one thing that I've always been proud of in my career is my writing. Station chiefs at the CIA told me that they loved reading my cables because it made them feel like they were in the room participating in the meeting. And that's how these reports were. And so finally, in discovery, we also see these notes back and forth among FBI agents, including one Peter Strzok, saying, look, he's not going to take the bait. We might as well just end this this operation. And Peter Strzok said, fine, end it.
Wow. That's amazing.
They knew I hadn't committed espionage.
Yeah, so John Brennan wants to get you somehow. And so he says, well, get him for espionage. Well, he didn't commit any espionage. We'll charge him with espionage anyway and make him defend himself. That's a quote from the memo that talk about. Then they set up a task force to run a sting on you.
They did
the same thing to Harvey Silvergate. He's a lawyer, and so they tried to entrap him, and it was Mueller who was running a wire on this guy trying to entrap him. We'll talk about that and what happened to you and the crimes that you say Brennan and Clapper have committed that Grassley admitted that they should be locked up for. We'll be right back with John Kiriakou. Stay with us. Welcome back. Here we had Brennan saying that the firing of Sessions, or the resignation of Sessions, was a constitutional crisis. Let me tell you what's a constitutional crisis. It's what Brennan and Mueller and Peter Strzok and Rod Rosenstein, these guys have been able to get away with every kind of crime, along with Hillary Clinton, and never answer for it. That constitutes a constitutional crisis. When they can violate the Constitution, when they can violate other laws as well and get away with it, that constitutional crisis. And John Kiriakou, a whistleblower, a former CIA operative, worked for them for 15 years, blew the whistle on torture. The Bush administration said, we're not going to prosecute him. As the Obama administration begins, he brings in John Brennan. John Brennan says, let's get him for espionage. They said, well, he didn't commit any espionage. He was a whistleblower. And they already decided they didn't want to come after him for that. So he says, well, charge him with espionage anyway and make him defend himself. So who do they turn to? They turn to Mueller and the FBI. They have a 12-man, quote-unquote, Kiriakou task force. That's the way they defined it in the memos that John Kiriakou got when they finally arrested him, as the Obama administration did, coming after multiple journalists and whistleblowers, as I point out, more than all of the other presidents combined. He came after whistleblowers and journalists. And so they came after John Kiriakou. They came after some of the NSA whistleblowers. They tried to set him up. And as Mueller began this special persecution that he's involved in now, the Russian conspiracy, you know, John, we got John Kiriakou on the line here. John, you know, Harvey Silvergate wrote an article, and he called Mueller a Torquemada. And he called him that because they tried to set him up just like they tried to set you up, but also because he was defending a client, Jeffrey McDonald, the famous trial that actually I think they patterned the fugitive on. But this guy had gone through multiple trials and been a great deal of misconduct by the Department of Justice, by the FBI. And Harvey Silvergate, the lawyer, as part of the appeal process, went into a meeting. The FBI people were there and so forth. And Mueller comes in and says, any criticism of the FBI, Department of Justice, government is off the table. You will not criticize anything that we do. And he said, this guy is very dangerous. Yeah. Yeah. Your comments?
Oh, he is dangerous. And, you know, this is part of the problem of everybody at that level and in those kinds of positions, is that they think that they are untouchable. And they think that they are the only good guys, and that they're going to take down the bad guys. Well, even when they know the bad guys aren't necessarily bad, they seek to bankrupt you. Remember, they only get promoted. They only get ahead in their careers if they can put you behind bars. They don't care if you're innocent or guilty. And in fact, one of my attorneys said something to me that was so telling. This was at the very end of the case, where they had made their final offer of 2.5 years in prison, and I decided to turn it down because I hadn't done anything wrong. And my attorney said to me, you know what your problem is? You think this is about justice, and it's not about justice. It's about mitigating damage.
Wow.
Well, that's not what our justice system is supposed to be. First of all, let me tell you, too, Harvey Silvergate, I think, is an American hero. He's a Harvard law professor, a renowned attorney, and he wrote a book called Three Felonies a Day.
That's right.
He argues that we are so over-criminalized, so over-regulated in this country, that the average American on the average day going about his normal business commits three felonies every day. And with Congress creating 50 new crimes per year, not 50 new laws, 50 new crimes, something that a year ago was perfectly legal, and this year you can go to prison for it on a felony charge, they can really get you if they want to get you. And if they've decided to target you because they don't like your politics, or they don't like your faith, or they don't like who you hang out with, they're going to get you, and there's nothing you can do about it.
That's right, and that's why it is so dangerous. Like you point out, they can tie you up in legal fees to destroy you. That's what they're trying to do to Roger Stone.
That's right.
They're trying to do that to Jerome Corsi and so forth. All these different individuals that are caught up in this because they don't like their politics. They're trying to do that to President Trump. They can run the clock out on the Trump administration if he lets them, these criminals who are doing this, instead of coming after them. And I want to talk about what crimes they've committed that you pointed out was admitted by Senator Grassley.
That's right.
Committed crimes. But the other part of this is the fact that they can get away with this, that they can do anything that they wish to people. And I think as they keep this Russian conspiracy theory going, the real intention is to try to get process crimes from people. Oh, you said this over there, but then, you know, they entrap people for saying different things on different occasions. That's one of their key tricks that they get to do against people. But also, we talk about three felonies a day. Boy, you can really multiply that when you start talking about financial transactions. And that's why they want to cross this line and start investigating President Trump's financial dealings, because, of course, they can find financial crimes on anybody. That's the easiest thing. That's what they got Al Capone on, was financial crimes, income tax evasion. They didn't get him for any of the other stuff they did. Murder, violation of alcohol prohibition, any of that stuff.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Let's talk a little bit about the crimes that they committed, though. Because as you pointed out, you also wrote an op-ed piece, and you said Chuck Grassley pointed this out on November the 1st. But, of course, at that time, everybody was caught up in, like, I think at the time, maybe it was the Khashoggi situation or something. You know, nobody, it's one story everybody focuses on. So it got buried. Nobody talked about it. But he talked about how Brennan and Clapper have violated multiple laws and should be locked up. You laid out the laws that they broke. Tell us about that.
Yes, 4 years ago, John Brennan and James Clapper sent something called the Congressional Notification to the Judiciary and Intelligence Committees. What a Congressional Notification is a memo from the CIA that is sent in the event that the CIA broke the law or a CIA officer broke the law or a recruited source, an agent, broke the law, and Congress needs to be informed. Well, John Brennan and James Clapper co-signed a memo to the chairman of these two committees saying, by the way, we've been hacking into your email systems to see if we can find any would-be whistleblowers who are trying to be in contact with you. Well, Grassley was outraged by this 4 years ago, rightfully so, because this is a felony, and it's a violation of the Constitution in at least two different ways. And so he immediately asked for the document to be declassified so that he could release it to the press. John Brennan's CIA didn't even bother to respond to him. Now, this is the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. They didn't even bother to respond. Grassley waited for 2 years and sent another letter saying, please declassify this. And again, he was ignored. So a couple of weeks ago, he decided to try again. He sent a letter to the CIA and within days received a response from the CIA Inspector General saying, I've reviewed this congressional notification. I don't know why it was classified in the first place. It's not legally classified. Consider it to be unclassified effective immediately. And Grassley released it to the press. And it's an admission that John Brennan ordered the CIA to hack into the email systems of both the Senate Judiciary Committee and the Senate Intelligence Committee. I am sickened by the fact that this just has been ignored by the mainstream media.
Yeah, absolutely. So they commit a crime by hacking into these people, and then they classify that and tell a senator that he can't tell anybody.
That's
and
right.
It continues on through the Obama administration.
All through the Obama administration. And remember, it is illegal to classify a crime, and it is illegal to classify anything just to save the CIA embarrassment. In addition, by classifying this document, not only did John Brennan violate the constitutional separation of powers, but he violated the Fourth Amendment's due process clause. You can't do things like that. The CIA cannot spy on other branches of government. It's illegal.
Yes. It shows that they believe that they are the true government. And quite frankly, I guess they are if Grassley accedes to their authority, right? I mean, he basically should have blown the whistle on them and said, lock these guys up. Instead, he bows down to them and continues to ask the CIA until they get another director of the CIA, would you please declassify this crime that they committed so I can talk about it? That's pathetic how weak that is.
That's a very important point, David. Grassley would have been perfectly within his rights 4 years ago to say, you know, classification, classification, releasing this information because it's illegal. And he could have done that, and he couldn't have been prosecuted because he has congressional immunity.
That's right. That's right. Well, I tell you what, he's not made of the same stuff you are, John. I really appreciate you blowing the whistle on this. You didn't have immunity. You served time in prison for exposing the crimes. Grassley could have done it with immunity, and he keeps quiet about it. And still, nothing is being done about it. That's the amazing thing. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for your service to this country, John Kiriakou. That's it for our program. Thanks for joining us.
Without the freedom to offend, there is no free speech. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Yeah, if you are not able to offend people, then you don't have any free speech. That's what we really need to understand with this whole tyranny of political correctness. It was designed to take away free speech from the beginning. It was designed to control people by controlling what can and cannot be said. Oh, we can't have division, we can't have hate, and I'm going to decide what hate is. And I'm going to make everybody unified under my single voice. That's what the establishment has been saying. Now, Glenn Greenwald of The Intercept, I started reading this to you just before we went to break. He said over the last couple of years, we've had a lot of melodramatics from the establishment press, from CNN and others. They get all bent out of shape
about trivial things like the president, his words, spouting adolescent insults on Twitter at Chuck Todd and Wolf Blitzer, or banning Jim Acosta from the White House press conference due to his refusal to stop preening for a few minutes so as to allow other journalists to ask questions. That's the whole thing. It's like I said before, you know, this is a ham. Jim Acosta is a ham. He wants to get up on the stage. He wants to stay there and drone on and on and on, repeating the same stuff that he says every press conference. The absurdity of what he was saying. Oh, there is no such thing as they're not going to come over the wall. There's no invasion. There's not even a caravan that threatens us. And he wants to continue to repeat that. And then when you say, okay, your time is up, we've heard it, sit down. Let somebody else say something. Maybe somebody in the press cartel will have something different. Well, actually, none of them are. They're all going to say the same type of stuff over and over again. Same questions that they ask every press conference. That's the nature of the press cartel that controls this. But when he won't get off the stage, you bring out the hook. And then he starts wrestling with a person trying to drag him off of the stage with a hook. Or take the microphone in this particular case. A young female intern. And with all of that, saying that's inappropriate behavior. Oh, everybody is all worried about that. And so we pay attention to that. Just like we all paid attention to Khashoggi, but we didn't pay any attention to what was going on in Yemen. Tens of thousands of people being murdered there. But if a Washington Post contract reporter that has been allied with Al-Qaeda or whatever, I mean, he's not a good guy. I mean, Mohammed bin Salman is not a good guy either. But nevertheless, we just completely ignore what's going on in Yemen and we focus on Khashoggi. The exclusion of everything else. And now we ignore what's going on with Julian Assange. We ignore the massive censorship that's being applied to alternative media. And we just focus on Jim Acosta and his melodramatics and his preening for the cameras. And so to some extent, for President Trump to say, yeah, we're going to come up with some rules and we'll tell you what those are. And here's what he had to say about those rules. Let's play video six.
Just ruled that you must give CNN reporter Jim Acosta his press pass back. Your reaction to the ruling?
It's fine. I mean, it's not a big deal. What they said, though, is that we have to create rules and regulations for conduct, et cetera, et cetera. We're doing that. We're going to write them up right now. It's not a big deal. And if he misbehaves, we'll throw him out. Or we'll stop the news conference. Actually,
what are your rules going to be? What is it that you're saying?
They'll have, they're doing
this,
them now.
This is over the line and you lose
your
press.
Yeah, they're doing them now. I mean, we'll have rules of decorum. You know, you can't keep asking questions. We had a lot of reporters in that room, many reporters in that room, and they were unable to ask questions because this guy gets up and starts, you know, doing what he's supposed to be doing for him and for CNN and, you know, just shouting out questions. But I will say this, look. Nobody believes in the First Amendment more than I do. And if I think somebody's acting out of sorts, I will leave. I'll say, thank you very much, everybody. I appreciate you coming, and I'll leave. And those reporters will not be too friendly to whoever it is that's acting up.
Why didn't you call on Acosta in the first place? I mean, there seems to be there's a simple solution here. Just don't call him.
Actually, I like to do it, but in many cases I don't. He'll stand up. He's unbelievably rude to Sarah Huckabee, who's a wonderful woman.
Yeah, he's a bore.
Unbelievably rude.
He's preening for the cameras. He's melodramatic. And we'll talk about what the real threat to press freedom is when we come back. I tell you what. One of the scariest things about this whole episode is even though they got caught red-handed, like that great report that Darren McBreen did, they're still pushing that narrative that he didn't touch her.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back, folks. I want to talk a little bit about the real threat to the First Amendment that is about to... It's yet another threat. We've had a lot of threats in the last few months. They're rapidly banning the First Amendment. They're doing it incrementally. Just like they have been working to take away our Second Amendment rights, they are very rapidly taking away our First Amendment rights. And when you look at, to me, one of the most dangerous things that came out of this Jim Acosta melodramatics is the fact that they were able to lie and get away with it. They had the entire press say, even though we had the video, they said, oh, look, that video came from InfoWars. Well, actually, the video came from C-SPAN. All we did was zoom in on it. And they're able to lie to the public's face and pretty much get away with it with a lot of people. A lot of people believe them. A lot of people understand what's going on. Some people looked at it. Some people can run the experiment themselves. Just take the C-SPAN video, zoom it in, and you can see what we saw. We didn't alter it. President Trump pointed that out. But it's amazing to me how they continue to push that line. You've got news organizations like Reuters say President Trump is still insulting journalists by claiming that Jim Acosta touched her and tried to wrestle that microphone away from her. Well, he did. You can see it. So they're able to lie to your face, even when we have it on video, and say, oh, don't believe those people at InfoWars with their lying video. That's the amazing thing to me. Now, as we move forward, they're ramping this up. Because, see, it's not enough when you're tyrants to take people off of social media. You also want to be able to demonetize them. You also want to be able to take down their website. And they've tried all these things to WikiLeaks as well, just like InfoWars. And then the next step is you lock up the journalists. Maybe execute them. Who knows? Because we've got a lot of people out there who've been calling for the execution of Julian Assange for quite some time. And so Glenn Greenwald says, you look at all of this melodramatics from CNN and these other people. You look at Jim Acosta preening for the cameras, refusing to get off. And he said, meanwhile, the actual and real threats to press freedoms that began with the Obama Department of Justice have escalated with the Trump Department of Justice. Why is that? Because the Trump Department of Justice is the Obama Department of Justice. Jeff Sessions did nothing there. You got the same people at the Obama Department of Justice still coming after Julian Assange, just like they're still coming after the Bundys, even though the judge there said, hey, we had a whistleblower expose that the FBI and the Department of Justice were lying. They were trying to entrap these people. We kept them in jail for 2 years. We brutally beat them in jail for 2 years. Now we got this whistleblower, the Bureau of Land Management, showed that they were lying. So I'm not going to put my neck on the line and be part of this conspiracy, said the judge. So she dismissed the trial with prejudice. But you still have the Obama Department of Justice leave-behinds still trying to lock them up. Say, let's start this over again. Let's do this. And still having people who were convicted prior to the whistleblower's information coming out still in jail. That's the corruption of the Department of Justice. That continues because we have the same people in place. Jeff Sessions did nothing about that. As a matter of fact, he had the audacity to go down to Nevada and brag about what a great job they were doing. So is it any surprise that we see this thing escalating? Hopefully things are going to change with Matt Whitaker. I hope he stays there. He's said some very good things. We'll have to see if he will walk the walk or if he's just nothing but talk. But personnel needs to change. Because this Obama Department of Justice, which is now the Trump Department of Justice, as Glenn Greenwald is pointing out, is making aggressive attempts to unearth and prosecute sources. And this is being ignored, if not applauded. That's the whole thing. All of the censorship on social media is being ignored or applauded by the press. And the same thing is happening to Julian Assange. They ignore it or they applaud it. That should really scare you. Really scare you. And remember, Obama imprisoned more people under the 1917 Espionage Act, more whistleblowers and journalists than all the other presidents in the past 100 years combined. Glenn Greenwald goes on to say, prosecuting Assange and or WikiLeaks for publishing classified documents would be an entirely different universe of press freedom threats. This is a real threat to press freedom, folks. Not Jim Acosta's privileges at the White House. Not one reporter's privileges at the White House. That does not threaten the First Amendment, but this does. Reporting, says Glenn Greenwald, reporting on the secret acts of government officials or powerful financial actors, including by publishing documents taken without authorization, is at the core of investigative journalism. And he talks about the examples of this. The Pentagon Papers, the Panama Papers, the Snowden disclosures. And remember the Pentagon Papers. So we just had the left patting themselves and the Washington Post and the New York Times on the back in the movie that was done by Steven Spielberg and had all of the Hollywood royalty, leftist royalty in there. They called it the Post. Remember when that came out? They're talking about how, oh, yeah, they stood up for the First Amendment against the military-industrial complex and the Nixon administration, and yay, great for them. Well, this is essentially the same issue. Pentagon Papers was. Said some of the most important journalism over the last several decades has occurred because it is legal and constitutional to publish secret documents, even if the sources of those documents obtained them through illicit or even illegal means. You understand? Somebody gets this illegally or illicitly, you can still publish it. They can come after the person who obtained the documents, but if they get the documents and they put them out there, everybody can publish them. And that's essentially what WikiLeaks did. That's why it's so important, by the way, folks, for Mueller and the deep state who want to get WikiLeaks to maintain this Russian conspiracy theory that has been thoroughly debunked by William Binney, an honest whistleblower from the NSA that they tried to lock up along with Thomas Drake and others. As the Washington Post put it in 2013, when it explained the Obama Department of Justice's decision at the time not to prosecute Julian Assange, they said they looked hard at Assange, but they realized that they had what they described as a New York Times problem. If the Justice Department indicted Assange, it would also have to prosecute the New York Times and other establishment news organizations and writers who publicized classified material, including the Washington Post and Britain's Guardian newspaper. But now they've gotten bolder. Now they don't care. Because, folks, the Trump Department of Justice, thanks to Jeff Sessions, is the Obama Department of Justice. When you don't send people to jail for violating the law and the Constitution, it only emboldens them and others to do the same thing. That's what John Kiriakou was pointing out Friday. If you haven't seen that interview that I had with John Kiriakou on Friday, you really need to watch that. He showed how Brennan and Mueller and Strzok decided that they would come after him for being a whistleblower on torture, and how they would try to get him under espionage, even though he hadn't committed espionage. That's what they're going to come after Julian Assange for. And when he hadn't committed espionage, they decided that they would entrap him using the FBI, using Mueller's FBI, with a team led by Peter Strzok. And Brennan said, I know he hasn't committed espionage. Make him defend himself. We'll charge him with espionage anyway. Make him defend himself. That's their tactics. That's who they are. And nothing has changed. Those same people and people like them are still in power. Furthermore, he pointed out that Brennan and Clapper committed felonies when they co-signed an order to spy on the Senate Judiciary Committee and other senators. Senator Grassley knew it at the time and was going to talk about it. So they classified that order where they committed the crime. They classified their felony. They made it a secret. That's why we have Julian Assange and others. That's why it's so important to have them. Because whistleblowers go to the mat. John Kiriakou went to jail to blow the whistle on torture. Senator Grassley wouldn't blow the whistle on the criminal acts of Brennan and Clapper, even though he had immunity as a senator. He had no courage. He had no backbone. He waited for 4 years until somebody that's new now at the Department of Justice said, okay, we'll declassify that. Then he talked about it. And guess what? The press doesn't want to talk about it. The press ignores it. So we got these guys who committed a felony. Then they classified their felony. We got a gutless, spineless senator who wouldn't tell the American people. It's up to the investigative journalists to do it. And those are the people they want to lock up. The whistleblowers, the investigative journalists. That's the dire situation of the country now. Welcome back. We're going to have Gerald Celente join us in the next segment. It'll be interesting to see what he has to say about General Electric, the favorite crony capitalist of the Obama administration. And now they're fighting junk status on Wall Street. This is the way that it goes. As one person said, I put the story out, and some person said, well, you shouldn't be cheering about GE having financial problems. I was like, well, understand, that is what happens when you give welfare to individuals or to corporations. It makes them weaker. That's part of the story of Thanksgiving. You know, the pilgrims nearly died because of socialism. And socialism, crony capitalism, corruption only weakens our economy, just like it weakens individual families, destroys families, it destroys corporations, it destroys individuals. And, of course, Jeffrey Immelt at GE, and at the time they owned NBC at that time, they had some very important things to offer Barack Obama, and he reciprocated. As we always say, an election is an advanced auction of stolen goods, and they were just getting paid off. And now they are reaping what they sowed. A weakened crony capitalist organization going by the wayside, just as they all will eventually. You know, they depend on subsidies for existence, just like the electric car manufacturers, and then you're going to eventually fail. But I want to get back before Gerald joins us to the press issues here. As we look at Julian Assange, Breitbart points out, remember that time that Hillary Clinton's State Department ignored Julian Assange's warnings about leaked cables? It's actually exposed in footage as part of a documentary film by Laura Poitras. It's called Risk. We've got a little bit of the trailer here. Let's play a little bit of that trailer from Risk, where they talk about Hillary Clinton's State Department being warned by Julian Assange, hey, this is going to get out in the wild. We censored this to take away information that would put lives at risk. But now, because of the careless handling of a reporter at The Guardian, all of this stuff is going to be out in the wild. You need to do something to protect these people before this happens. We don't have any control over that. Here's the clip from the trailer for Risk.
Have you got the U.S. ambassador? Well, please do that.
The beginning of the film, you'll see there's this extraordinary phone call that Julian makes where he's calling, he's trying to reach Hillary Clinton to speak to the State Department and warn them that that a password had been, it was being circulated and that files were circulating on the internet. And so you have this just sort of incredible behind the scenes encounter.
Are you recording?
Yep. Oh, hello. Can I please speak to Hillary Clinton?
Sorry,
I'm calling from the office of Julian Assange. It's very important.
She's with Huma right now. Sorry, she can't get on the phone. It's like the late night call.
Julian Assange is the founder of WikiLeaks.
You might know him. Oh, you'll get to know him a little bit better in a few years.
And all of the
he's
U.S. Department of State cables, we have intelligence that they are about to be put on the web, unredacted, not by us. And I would like to speak to her about this.
Okay, let's hold it right there. I'll explain to everybody what's going on, because we've got a lot of people who are listening, and it's kind of visual. The bottom line is that they got the cables. Prior to the release, WikiLeaks practice harm minimization redactions so that they wouldn't expose people who could lose their lives. That's something that Hillary Clinton, by the way, did not do with her private server. She didn't do any harm minimization redactions. She didn't follow national security protocol. And as a result, we had a lot of CIA assets in China who were executed during the time that she was running that. And it stopped when she was out of the State Department. Interesting, isn't it? All those Chinese spies for the CIA that were lined up and publicly executed, they knew everything that was going on. They had embedded software into her unprotected server that sent them courtesy copies of everything that Hillary Clinton sent or received on email. So I guess the question is, you know, if documents that were taken off of her unsecured server are published, then who violated the law? Like we pointed out with the Pentagon Papers and these other papers, it's been established fact that you don't come after the person who publishes information that was leaked, that was put out in the open, right? So the New York Times and the Washington Post could publish the Pentagon Papers and not be prosecuted. They could come after the individual who stole them, but not the people who published it. So I guess the question is, if Hillary Clinton puts on her unsecured server, highly classified, as a matter of fact, classified born, classified above top secret, because it's conversations that she's having with other heads of state or about other heads of state. So it doesn't have to have a stamp put on it. It's born above class, above top secret with that classification. Just as nobody put a stamp on the Navy sailor's pictures of his bunk in the sub that he took for souvenir. They said that was born confidential. And so we're going to send you to jail, said James Comey. But I'm not going to send Hillary Clinton to jail. Her stuff was born classified, born above top secret, that classification, but no problem for her. And if she exposes this stuff, and puts it out there on the web for everybody to see, then is it the problem of WikiLeaks because they published that? Or is it the problem of Hillary Clinton for putting it out there? You know, so who is it that gets in trouble? Is it Hillary, the publisher? Is it both of them? No, here's the answer. It's anyone but Hillary gets punished. That's the answer to that multiple choice question. When Hillary Clinton becomes a whistleblower, in effect, by declassifying information and putting it on the internet, Hillary Clinton doesn't get punished, but the publishers get punished for that. And so these people called up Hillary Clinton and the State Department, tried to warn them. They videotaped it, said, this has gotten out. Due to an error on the part of Guardian journalist David Lay, it led to third parties obtaining a password that granted access to the full unredacted cables. They warned them. They said people might be harmed. You need to give these people a warning because we can't control this. And so as we look at this, Politico is saying, you know, if they charge Julian Assange, it's not going to just be something that gets the Washington Post and the New York Times in potential jeopardy. But it's also going to defend liberals who really still believe in First Amendment protections. It's going to anger conservatives who have celebrated him for exposing Hillary Clinton, her emails and everything about her. It's also maybe going to concern President Trump because it's going to be used for Mueller's investigation. As David Combs, a lawyer who represented Chelsea Manning, said, it should not be lost upon anyone that there are leaks of classified information to the media just about every day. But I want you to hear what Ben Sasse, Senator Ben Sasse from Nebraska, had to say. This traitor to the Constitution, despicable enemy of the Bill of Rights, oath violator, Ben Sasse. This is cut and dried, he said. WikiLeaks is an outlet for foreign propaganda. No, your propaganda, Ben Sasse. Julian Assange, he said, is an enemy of the people. He deserves to spend the rest of his life in an American prison. You don't deserve to be in the Senate, Ben Sasse. Betrayer. Oathbreaker. Good for Sean Hannity. You know, he had Julian Assange on. He said, thank you for showing us how corrupt and dishonest and phony our government is. That's the whole point. He said, I do hope you get free one day. I agree with Sean Hannity. He should be freed. He should be given a Presidential Medal of Freedom for protecting us from the corrupt administration of Hillary Clinton. And we need to push back and lock those people up, not the free press. We'll be right back with Gerald Celente. Stay with us.
Analyzing the globalists' next move. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. And the guy who probably knows the globalists' next move better than anybody is Gerald Celente of Trends Research. You can find Trends Journal, which he publishes, at trendsresearch.com. And I want to talk to Gerald Celente about not only the crony capitalism that has run rampant this last week with Amazon's deal, Bloomberg and so forth, but now we see GE, once America's most valuable company, today it is fighting junk bond status. But before we get to that, I want to talk to Gerald Celente about War and Peace. You know, Gerald Celente, very much a non-interventionist as I am. He started a movement, Occupy Peace. And as he wrote and talked about this, he said, we just had an election. Nobody is talking about war and peace. So joining us now to talk about war and peace, to talk about crony capitalism, and to talk about what's going to be coming, the trends that are establishing themselves in the economy as well as our society, is Gerald Celente. Welcome, Gerald.
Oh, thanks for having me on, David. And again, thank you for all that you do and InfoWars does to give people so much information. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And I really appreciate you talking about this because it is exactly the issue. You know, we look at all the preening of Jim Acosta and CNN and so forth. CNN and Fox News that defends and stands with CNN, they never talk about war and peace. They've got these little issues out there that they won't talk. They won't talk about the real issues of free speech, and they won't talk about the real issues of war and peace either, will they?
No. And of course, you don't expect them to talk about free speech because they control the speech networks. I mean, as you well know, five companies control over 90% of all the media in America, the broadcast media. So, of course, they're not going to. And in this whole midterm election, not one word from those so-called liberal Democrats or Republicans about the ongoing longest war in America, by far, the Afghan war. And you saw that report that just came out last week, David. What was it, $6 trillion?
Yeah, that they spent so far on the war on terror. And, you know, Gerald, there's another $21 trillion that they can't account for. Now, you know, over a period of about 20 years, that's the entire debt, the cumulative debt of all the annual deficits that we have. $21 trillion is the amount of money that the Pentagon can't even answer for.
So now imagine if $21 trillion was put into the country of we the people. Could you imagine what this place would look like compared to what it is?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, look at the rundown infrastructure. I live in Pothole City over here, and you
me
got
too.
One. It's all over. Look at you take the subways in New York. It's a night in Calcutta. You know, I mean, it's a joke, a bad joke. So going back to the elections, David, not one word about the ongoing wars and losing wars. And, you know, I'm tired of hearing, you know, the military. All right, here's the deal. Would you hire anyone that has never had a success in their lifetimes and to do a job that they're supposed to be professional in? America has not won a war since World War II.
Let's
call a spade a spade. I don't want my money going to these losing wars that are killing millions of innocent people, costing us trillions of dollars. I don't want to be an accessory to the crime. I don't like you taking my money to go do this. I work very hard for what I do.
And, you know, as they're doing that, Gerald, this last weekend, as Joe Biggs took California Congressman Swalwell to task, Eric Swalwell, who wrote a piece saying, well, we're going to offer you $1,000 for your guns. If you don't take it, then we'll lock you up. And Biggs says, what are you trying to do, start a civil war here? Well, we've got nuclear weapons. And as I saw that, I pointed out, I said, you know what? It's called asymmetric warfare. You guys have, it's very easy to win battles when you got firepower superiority, but you have lost every war. You know, a battle doesn't mean that you win the war. They have lost every war that they fought since World War II because they can't occupy people and recreate regime change, recreate nation building and so forth. They just destroy.
Again, you've said it. I mean, could you imagine if another country came in here and tried to do that to us?
Yeah.
Would we fight? We'd be called fighting the invaders, militants and terrorists.
That's right.
That's what they call us.
Yeah,
so going back to the elections, they also, those so-called liberal Democrats, they just brought in over 10 people from the military, industrial and intelligence security complex that they voted in.
That's right.
These wonderful liberals.
They've
and not a word
that.
About peace.
They ignore the censorship or they applaud it. And they are absolutely authoritarian. They do not want to have, they talk about, oh, Trump is divisive. InfoWars is divisive. We can't have multiple voices. We're going to have one voice and it's going to be ours. Very dangerous.
That's right.
Sometimes. Yeah.
Very dangerous. So anyway, Occupy Peace. And we're moving very quickly forward with it. In this summer, this next spring, fall. We're going to be launching, hopefully, an Occupy Peace Festival. I realize that when we have Occupy Peace, we had Ralph Nader, Cindy Sheehan, Dr. Robert Thurman, others. People don't want to hear the anti-war message. I mean, you just had a women's march against the Pentagon. Hardly anybody showed up in D.C. You know, so what I want to do is make it a festival. Put music, entertainment, arts, crafts, vendors. You know, make it have it give you more of a feeling of liberty, love, and joy and beauty. So that's what we're working toward. And anybody that wants to help us to go to OccupyPeace.com.
That's great. We're going to want to follow that because, you know, I've reported that the new commander, you know, they have another role in every, War Machine or something like that, that Brad Pitt starred in, where it's about McChrystal, is based on, the writings of the journalist that they later killed. Michael Hastings. Nevertheless, you know, they have this general every year or two. They bring in a new general with his staff. This newest one said, we're not going to be able to win this war. It's going to be a political victory here. War Machine. Yeah, there it is right there. You can see it on IMDb. It's going to be a political victory. And of course, I think it's no coincidence, Gerald, that they have so much lithium for car batteries and other electric devices that they're forcing down our throats.
And I think it's no coincidence that they are growing so much of the opium there since we took over and guarded their fields. And now we have an opioid crisis here. I don't think those things are coincidence. I don't think it's a coincidence that we're still there because of those reasons.
You mean you don't think that the United States went to into Iraq and Libya because it was their broccoli crop? I thought that's what they wanted. Oil? Oil?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. Oil. Or in case of rare earth minerals or, you know, that something else that isn't so rare anymore after we got there, which is opioid. Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's just very sad. And the country doesn't seem to care about it. But again, look at what it's costing us and look what it has done to us. And again, there's that wonderful quote. We have it in a piece that we just did. U.S. elections, not a word about war, not a peep about peace. General Dwight D. Eisenhower's famous farewell address when he warned the nation that the military-industrial complex was robbing the country, the genius of the scientists, the sweat of the laborers, and the future of the children. This is a five-star general, supreme commander of the Allied forces, and two-term president.
And then he also mentioned the universities. He said they're going to wind up taking over all of the research. And look at the horrendous research that's being done by DARPA and others. I mean, this stuff is beyond science fiction. Science fiction has to catch up to what they're doing. They're talking about getting into people's minds and implanting false memories or removing actual memories. They're talking about having mind control of machines and drones and so forth. I mean, this is beyond science fiction stuff. Besides the fact that they're weaponizing disease and ways to spread it, they're targeting specific DNA groups for extinction. This is insane. This is what our taxpayer dollars are going for. Maybe that's one of the reasons why they're hiding so much of it. And yet, what we can see that they're doing and what they admit that they're doing is just beyond belief. We look like conspiracy theories when we report what the mainstream media is putting out there. All right, we've got to take a quick break, and we're going to be right back with Gerald Celente. And we come back, I want to talk to Gerald about what he thinks about Amazon's gift package from New York City and Washington, D.C. What he thinks about GE, that was once America's most valuable company, now is fighting junk status. And why politicians love these things that they're doing with Amazon and others. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Money. Welcome back. We're talking to Gerald Celente of TrendsResearch.com. You can find him on Twitter at Gerald Celente. At Trends Research, you can find out how to subscribe to his excellent journal, Trends Journal. There you'll get his articles where he talks about short-term, long-term economic trends, as well as cultural and political trends, and something that many of us think still matter, that is war and peace. And so I want to talk to Gerald now in this segment about what's going on with things like this massive Amazon deal that we saw. We had Jeff Bezos say, well, someday Amazon is going to go out of business. We just need to make sure that we drag that out as long as possible. And so now they just bought themselves some more time, Gerald, I guess, with billions of dollars in bailout from governments in Washington and New York. What do you think about it?
Well, you called it crony capitalism.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't have capitalism left in this country anymore. It's the merger of state and corporate powers. It's called fascism.
That's right.
That was Mussolini's definition of it, and the cat knew a thing or two about fascism. And that's all this is. It's fascism. It's a total takeover. You mentioned another guy, Bloomberg. He's going to run for president. Great. A billionaire, another billion. All the money, just if you have money, you could run for office. If you don't, then you don't count. So going back,
if you got a big corporation, you can control free speech, and everybody's just fine with that as long as you do it along the lines of what the left likes for right now.
Exactly. Again, and you got to put a lemon in there and a Koopa, so.
You look at this Amazon deal, as one analyst said, for what they did in New York with Amazon, they could have given a 29% tax break across the board to all businesses. Now, Ocasio-Cortez is saying, oh, this is bad, to give this kind of money to Amazon. And I agree with her. She was absolutely right. But I know she would have fought a general tax cut for businesses across the board And instead, this kind of let's reward the big guy, one of the world's, perhaps, I guess, the world's richest man, I guess, depending on the stock market on any given day. But let's give the world's richest man a tax break, but we'll keep the taxes high on everybody else in New York.
Yeah, and again, it's not a tax break. What it is, it's a levy of more taxes on us.
That's right.
Because it's costing the New Yorkers, it's costing us $48,000 a job. That's the estimate.
Mm-hmm.
$48,000. And here's another disgusting part of it. That little lowlife that we got up here for governor, that arrogant Andrew Cuomo, along with his arrogant little boy brother over there, Chris Cuomo on CNN, two little boys who'd be in two nobodies if daddy wasn't Mario. Let's get this straight, guys. All right? Born on third base, thought you hit a home run, had enough of your arrogance and stealing my money, but to move on, because I have five buildings over here in Kingston, three of the most historic buildings in America on the most historic four corners. You know what kind of tax breaks I get? Nothing.
That's right.
Nothing.
They're taxing you, and then they're shifting it over to Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, and the other developers that build things, they give them big tax breaks. But anyway, that little lowlife Andy boy Cuomo, they kept this out of the news until after the elections. That's right. We just had a governor's election here. But not a word about giving the richest man in the world our money so that he can get richer. And by the way, now you have to, you know, I used to work, I was a bartender not far from where they're doing this. I was in Woodside. They're in Long Island City, right next to it. The transportation system now stinks. It's disgusting. Oh, and now you're going to put all these more people in there in a rundown transportation system that they're going to give you that much for? It's disgusting. But again, this
they're
is
gonna
not...
They're going to build helipads for him. They're going to subsidize helipads for him while everybody else is...
You know.
Yeah, everybody else is crawling around in a hole in the ground that's crumbling, and they're going to build helipads for Bezos, the billionaire.
Yeah, and his rich buddies going in and out. So again, this is not crony capitalism. It's fascism. It's the merger of state and corporate powers. It's a total takeover.
Yeah, that's right. It's not capitalism at all. They say, this is capitalism. And you know, you're pointing out $40,000. I've seen some people, I've seen many press organizations say it's $40,000 per job. Some of them say as high as $60,000. I don't know where they're getting the different metrics, it's been reported anywhere from $40,000 to $60,000 per job. It's absolutely insane. And we see this type of thing. It's not just Bezos. I mean, politicians are doing this all over the place. We see
all
it happening with Boeing, Tesla. We see it happening with all the sports stadiums. The same thing happens with sports stadiums. They rob the local businesses, the small businesses, and say, oh, we got to have this thing because it's going to make us look good. And then they give these billionaires billions of dollars for their stadium so they can play their game with multimillionaires running around in front of the audiences. We're supposed to all line up and cheer.
Morality is gone in America. It's gone. We were talking about war and peace before. Look, this is fallout from a mental illness that just keeps generating more and more immorality. The fish rots from the head down. And that's all we've been having is a lot of rotted fish that people call Republicans and Democrats. Murderers and thieves. They steal our money to give it to their buddies, and the names are too big to fail, which is anathema to capitalism because there's no such thing. Oh, and before you were talking about General Electric, how much did Obama give them in a bailout? What was it, almost $200 billion?
Yeah, absolutely. But, he had NBC working for him as well, under the umbrella of GE at the time, so
that's
they helped him push his agenda of Obamacare and so forth. And it's also, the political favors. I mean, part of the political favors is giving him favorable press coverage. But as H.L. Mencken said, these elections are an advanced auction of stolen goods. It's never been more obvious or to a greater extreme than we see right now.
Never. Never. And it's really sad because the only thing that I could see changing it is a new party. Something has to be totally different. It's happening all over the world except here. Again, we just had a midterm elections. Okay, all you Democrats that are so happy, watch all the great changes that come about. Nothing. Be more of the same, but worse. That's all it's becoming. And by the way, people better get ready. We are in a stage one recession. What we've been saying about now, and you know, I was the first to call the Trump rally. I'm a political atheist. I don't take sides on issues. And we were the first in February to say this is the end of it. It's going down from here. There may be another up, but this is now the end. The world cannot take higher interest rates, period, paragraph. What boosted the global economy was zero negative interest rates and quantitative easing. Now that you've stopped that and you're seeing mortgage rates, for example, in the United States, if you have 20% down and you're getting a 30-year, it's at 5%, you can see the slowdown in new mortgage applications, new sales of existing and new homes down. You're looking at confidence in the building industry at lows.
Yeah.
The stocks are deep in bear territory. And, what is it, over 1,000 people in the mortgage division that Wells Fargo just laid off last week?
Yeah, I know. They're having liquidity problems in a lot of major real estate markets. People are, the inventories of houses are building up and so forth. It's looking like 2008 all over again, isn't it? Except bigger this time. Bigger bubble.
It's bigger because the debt bubble is bigger. We're talking $250 trillion worth of global debt. And again, now you're hearing people from the establishment, like Ray Dalio, the head of Bridgewater, the biggest hedge fund in the world, saying that the cheap money's drying up. We have problems coming up. You're hearing Paul Tudor Jones, again, a billionaire. Investors, they're all saying the same thing. The cheap money is drying up. It was only, again, zero negative interest rates. Nobody ever heard of this stuff before.
I know.
And they still can't keep
it going. It's another rope-a-dope. And they did it to us right on the back of, they turned around and did it again in 10 years and did it bigger than they did it the first time. I mean, creating a bubble and then starting to raise interest rates every single quarter. They're going to burst it. They've indicated they're going to continue to raise interest rates, right?
I mean, that's the story. I want to make this really clear. Wherever interest rates go, that's where the economy goes.
That's right. Yeah. Well, thank you for joining us, Gerald. It may be a rocky 2019. We'll be in touch with you. We'll get more of your projections. You can find Gerald at trendsresearch.com. Again, he publishes Trends Journal. You can find out how to get that there at trendsresearch.com. Thank you for joining us, Gerald Celente. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. As Gerald was saying, Gerald Celente, when talking in the last segment, he said they tax all of the rest of us in order to subsidize their pets, just as Obama subsidized his pet CEO, Jeffrey Immelt, at GE. It's kind of interesting as we look at that theme. You know, in Chicago, who are they taxing? They've just added a 9% amusement tax for PlayStation users. This should get the attention of the millennials. This should wake them up about taxes, about redistribution. A 9% PlayStation amusement tax. And, of course, this will be, presumably, I guess they'll use that money to not pay off their unfunded pension fund plan, but probably to subsidize a stadium somewhere for some sports billionaires and millionaires who will be playing on the team. Meanwhile, when we look at other tax news, we had the White House and Mitch McConnell and others talking about how they were going to have a deep tax cut for the middle class. They said that right up before the election, and that now seems to have completely disappeared. Along with any talk about anchor babies and birthright citizenship, that's also disappeared right after the election.
I don't really see anything happening effectively at the border in terms of protecting it. President Trump sent the military to the border to protect it, and yet they and the Border Patrol seem to be completely ineffective there at Tijuana. A few Border Patrol troops, very, very small compared to a massive crowd. There wasn't really anything they could do with that few people there and no effective obstacles. So you have the invaders, all young men, able-bodied young men, as President Trump pointed out, waving the flag of the country that they're supposedly fleeing from while they're burning American flags at the same time. He says, what's up with that? Perfect, perfect example. And as I said, he really nailed their hypocrisy to the wall. But what he needs to do is he needs to build the wall and he needs to nail some concertina wire to it, or at least have the troops do that and show up in significant force to keep this from happening. I mean, these guys are walking up and down the wall there, what there is of it, sitting on it, getting in on the other side, taunting the Border Patrol, writing stuff in the sand. And people were recording all this. They're making a fool out of us. And I find it interesting at this time of year, you know, we get to Thanksgiving. I'll have more about this to say on our Thanksgiving program. But you ever think about the fact that the liberals say, oh, we're a nation of immigrants. Immigration is great. It's what made us great. Except for those pilgrims. Those pilgrims, oh, they're evil. Those evil Christian pilgrims, they came here and they destroyed the Indians. It's like, well, how'd they do that? I say they came here in massive numbers. They weren't asking the Indians to support them like the people who are coming in now. That's a different thing. Maybe some of them say, oh, look at this. I think they brought in disease that decimated the Indians as well. Well, we're not allowed to ask if the people coming into this country are healthy or not. I mean, you know, that was part of the Ellis Island experience. They did quarantine people there until they could check them out for health purposes. But we're not allowed to do that now because that would be racist. And so it was such a wonderful thing. All the different ways of immigration, wonderful thing. And what's happening right now, we just need to open up our borders and let people come in here in uncontrolled numbers. Well, isn't that what happened to the Indians? And you guys are so upset about what happened to the Indians this time of year. I mean, that's not the full picture. But you understand the schizophrenia of the left. Pilgrims, bad, killed all Indians. But let's bring in uncontrolled immigration, unvetted for disease. And let's not even let people come in here who want to work hard and build a life. No, no, no. We're going to bring in people who want to live off of us. Yeah, the Indians lost their civilization, didn't they? They lost their nation, their culture, their civilization, their laws, and so forth. But it's good. It's good. Oh, except when Europeans and Christians did it. Then it's bad. Yeah, we'll talk about that more on Thanksgiving. Stay with us. We'll be right back. More news.
Truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back on this Monday, November 19th, 2018. I am David Knight, and we're talking about the border. President Trump's genius rhetorical device when he came out this weekend. He really hit the nail right on the head. He said, if they hate their country so much, why are these invaders waving the flags of the countries that they're supposedly fleeing from as refugees? Oh, and also, why are they burning the American flag if they want to come here for asylum? He said they're talking all about their great fear, all their problems with their country, but they're all waving their country's flag. What's that all about? If they have such fear, such problems, and they hate their country, why do we see all the flags being waved for Guatemala or Honduras, or El Salvador? This has nothing to do with asylum. This has to do with getting into our country illegally. So we have millions of people in line to get into our country legally, said Trump. Those people have preference. I'll tell you somebody who really is a refugee, somebody who really should be allowed into this country, and that is Asia Bibi in Pakistan. Of course, she was a lady who has been on death row, I think, for about 8 years. Finally, their highest court said, no, we're not going to execute her for blasphemy. She had a drink of water from a well, a laborer, poor laborer. The other women in the field were Muslims, and they said, you filthy Christian, don't you dare drink out of that unless you renounce Christ or something of that effect. She said, I'm not going to do that. I'm a Christian. I have a right to my beliefs. So then they went to the court, accused her of blasphemy. The court sentenced her to death. An 8-year trial ordeal in jail on death row, a mother. And she was finally released by the Supreme Court. It caused riots throughout Pakistan on the streets of all the major cities, were shut down by people rioting in the street calling for her death. And this individual applied for asylum to the UK. And the people in the UK who now love their Somalis but hate their Christians refused to let her in. And so many people have called on President Trump to offer her asylum. One of those people is Rand Paul. Here's what Rand Paul had to say.
Of Asia Bibi, you've advocated that Pakistan release her for quite some time. 2 weeks ago, the Supreme Court overturned her sentence. Prime Minister Theresa May denied her asylum request. Do you believe that the U.S. should grant her asylum?
Absolutely, and I've talked to the president about this, and my hope is that he will offer her asylum here. This is a woman who's a Christian in a predominantly Muslim nation of Pakistan. She went to draw water from the well in a Muslim village, and they began beating her with sticks and stones, and she lay bleeding, asking for help. When the police came, they arrested her, not her attackers. And so Christians are very much beleaguered, and so are Hindus. Any other minority religion are beleaguered in Pakistan, and if ever there was a call for a refugee to be admitted into our country, I think this is one.
That's right. Do you hear the left talking about that? No, they don't. No, they don't. Every group, except for Europeans, Christians, white people, every other group is protected status. No, their real agenda, we understand what their real agenda is, but this is a genuine case of somebody who needs refugee status. Not just targeted by her government, but even more importantly, as actually some people in the government realize this, one individual who was a government official said, this is outrageous. We need to change this blasphemy law that she's been sentenced to death under. We need to change that. And because he talked about getting rid of that blasphemy law, he was assassinated by his own bodyguard. That's Pakistan, our ally. You know, kind of like Saudi Arabia. We have these wonderful Islamic allies that we can't do without. And it is the people of Pakistan, not the government, that is even a greater threat to Asia Bibi. President Trump needs to be magnanimous. He needs to rise above this. He needs to extend his hand and give real refugee status to this person. It would go a long way towards doing the right thing, doing the humanitarian thing, but also pushing back against this phony refugee narrative that's coming from the left. A good example of this is the New American, many others are pointing out. And I've got Alex Newman from the New American going to be joining us at the bottom of the hour. We're going to be talking about the UN agenda and how they are pushing through treaties and so forth, pushing this mass migration, characterizing any opposition to it as hate speech that has to be censored. Yes, that's right. As they point out in the New American, the Tijuana mayor is calling the migrants a horde, not a caravan. He's not referring to it as a caravan. That was the hand-picked label that it's being marketed to us as by the people who organized it, who organized this mass invasion. And as they went to Tijuana, the mayor there, Gastelum, I think is the way you pronounce his name, he called them a horde. In an interview with a Mexican television network, he said, Tijuana is a city of immigrants, but we don't want them in this way. It was different with the Haitians. They carried papers. They were in order. It wasn't a horde, pardon the expression. No, I think a horde is probably a good name for it. It's a horde. It's an invasion. He also called it a tsunami, an avalanche. It's an invasion, folks. When you have an uncontrolled number of people coming in and there's no control over the number of people that come in, it's an invasion. He went on to say he estimated that 2,750 migrants have deluged the city, overwhelmed their ability to deal with it. Same thing that's happened throughout Europe as well. He worries about the estimates that another 7,300 are on the way. And then he called them something else in explaining what he's up against. He called them a tsunami. An unsustainable deluge, a flood. He said, no city in the world is prepared to receive this, if I'm allowed, this avalanche, he said. It is a tsunami. There's concern among all the citizens of Tijuana. That left BuzzFeed aghast, writes the New American. They call for the opponents of the migrant squatters racist. Racist, if you say that. If you say that it's a flood, if you say they're coming in here in numbers that we can't sustain. They're coming in here, they want to be housed and fed and so forth, and we can't do that. Now, if they were going to stay, he would be calling it an invasion. They don't want to stay in Tijuana. They want to come to America. But they are still a horde, a tsunami, a flood, an avalanche. He can't deal with it. It's overwhelming what they have. They not only marched under the banner of Honduras, but they also burned the American flag. And as the president pointed out, isn't it ironic that they say they're fearful of being in their country? And as I pointed out many times, you have these MS-13 dreamers. And again, there is no such thing really as a dreamer. There never was a Dream Act that was passed. You had Barack Obama's Department of Homeland Secretary, Janet Napolitano, wrote an order. She just decided. She decided she would do this. She said, I'm going to defer action on childhood arrivals. In other words, I'm not going to do anything to enforce the law for illegal immigrants under a certain age. Not going to do it. Not going to enforce the law. That's what my office, I know I have a duty to do that. I know I swore an oath to protect the Constitution and its laws, but I'm not going to do that. I've got DACA. And now we got judges telling the Sessions and the people, oh, you can't do anything about that. If you want to change that, you're going to have to fight us in court. And he goes, oh, okay. All right, I'll do that. That was Jeff Sessions' big problem. Even when it was an issue that he was compassionate about, even when it was an issue that he wanted to do something about, just as we saw in the discussion that he had about war. And he had it with Leon Panetta. Leon Panetta, who used to be a congressman, then he became the, before he became CIA director under Obama, he was head of the Department of Defense, and Jeff Sessions was questioning him in his capacity as head of the Department of Defense. Jeff Sessions, as a senator, questioned him and said, if you put ground troops in Syria, because that's what they were talking about doing, and of course they now have them there, but he said, if you put ground troops in Syria, you're going to come to Congress for permission, right? And he goes, no, we'll tell you what we decide to do. We'll talk to the UN, and we'll talk to NATO, and we'll make our decisions, and then eventually we'll inform you here. And he goes, Jeff Sessions, I can't believe you're saying that. You're congressman. You know Constitution. You're going to do that? And he said the same sort of, very, very weak, very, very weak when it comes to issues like immigration, issues like war and peace, even though he knows what the Constitution says, he won't enforce it. And then, of course, he ignores the 10th Amendment and tries to push for his little pet project of marijuana prohibition. Good riddance. I hope this other guy is better. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You know, just about a week or so ago, it was on the Drudge Report. Human drugs flowing into the animal kingdom. It's nothing new. We've talked about this for a very long time at InfoWars. As a matter of fact, one of the first products we had were water filters. Because of this, because of fluoride, where it's being deliberately put in, but also because of accidents like we see in Flint, Michigan, or other places where you have underground storage of chemicals or businesses leak into the aquifer, or maybe you've got runoff from glyphosate in a rural area. All these different things can enter your water supply. As a matter of fact, this particular article is coming out of Australia. Got a researcher at the Cary Institute of Ecosystem Studies in Australia, working with Australian and Swedish colleagues. What they found were pharmaceuticals in aquatic life. We've talked about this many times. Hormone disruptors that are part of the pharmaceuticals that we ingest and then pass into the water system, into the sewer system. They get recycled. They don't get filtered out by the water processing plants. And, of course, the aquatic life is exposed to it. So you see hormone disruptors. That's what Alex Jones is talking about when he says turning the frogs gay. We know that's happening. Of course, they're doing that deliberately in the schools, giving drugs to young children before they reach puberty and then pushing them to make gender decisions. 17 children in one UK school. And one teacher blew the lid on that and said, look, they're gaslighting these kids. And then they're giving them drugs to keep them from reaching puberty, interfering with their hormones. You don't think that's deliberate? You don't think that people that would do that to kids in school would do that deliberately to the water supply in general? Well, maybe you've got a higher opinion of politicians and humanity than I do, but I think that some of those things are not simply accidental. And as we look at this, we see not only the hormone disruptors evidenced in aquatic life, but we also see it in terms of aggression of aquatic life, because there's also SSRIs there, the same thing that caused us to have these school shootings. So if you want to protect your family against accidents or deliberate contamination, toxins that make their way into the water supply, take a look at the products that we've got at InfoWarsStore.com. We have the Alexa Pure Pro filter, the large gravity feed water filter right now, $123 off. That's about half price right now. And, of course, free shipping store-wide and big discounts. 67% off Silver Bullet, 57% off Super Male Vitality, 50% off BrainForce Plus and Survival Shield X3 Nascent Iodine. And, again, free shipping store-wide. One last special I'll tell you about, $10 off InfoWars Hexagon Polo if you use the code REALNEWS at checkout. It's just for the listeners of this program. $10 off the InfoWars golf shirt with the Hexagon logo. Just enter REALNEWS at checkout. All right, let's take a real quick look. And before we move on from immigration, I mean, when we look at this and the fact that now this is off of the agenda. I mean, we're not talking about anchor babies. We're not talking about the troops at the border. Of course, the troops at the border, we have the general there, the Pentagon spokesperson said the troop levels at the U.S. border pretty much peaked. And then the general who's in charge down there, Dunford, said U.S. troops aren't going to deny immigrants entry into the U.S. Yeah, we noticed, General Dunford. We noticed you didn't do anything there in Tijuana. Notice that. They're saying, oh, it's only going to be about 5,000, not 15, and we're not going to do anything else. It's amazing. People who are traveling and calling it the caravan, the people who are supporting it, the people who organized this invasion, are saying there's so many people here, we can't even walk. It's hard to walk. And these guys are admitting that they're just coming here seeking jobs. They're saying, we're not looking to get asylum here. Let me tell you what the politicians want, of course. New Jersey is going to become a full-fledged sanctuary state by Christmas. When we look at what's happening in California, the House Democrats are pushing to remove the censorship question off of the census. Why do they want to do that? Well, because they've completely turned California blue. That means that they get greater representation if they can count the illegal aliens who are here, the foreign citizens who are in California. Count them as part of the citizenship, and then they get more congressional representatives in solid blue California. Folks, this is an existential issue for our country if we don't stop this. And here's another one. Over the weekend, Joe Biggs, good for him, took on Congressman Eric Swalwell from California. Now, Swalwell, and went big all over news organizations. InfoWars reported, Breitbart, New American, Fox News was talking about it, Dan Bongino there. Even Reason was talking about this. And here's what Reason had to say, Brian Dory at Reason. He said, what does it take to get a U.S. House member to sarcastically, remember he says this sarcastically, but it is a U.S. House member very publicly threatening to nuke American citizens who want to defend their constitutional rights under the Second Amendment. Well, it doesn't take any more to get him to do that than to just push back on Twitter against him. And that's exactly what Joe Biggs did. And the guy revealed his authoritarian, tyrannical, dictatorial leanings. He said it goes back to an op-ed piece that he wrote for USA Today. But they go on to say this in Reason. They said, just a little chilling, isn't it, to say that you would get this mafia-like reminder that we can and will kill you if you don't do what we say? And then following up by saying, oh, I'm sure we can talk it out, right? You wouldn't want this to happen. I wouldn't want to have to break your legs, nuke your community, would you? He said, I was just being sarcastic after everybody started calling him on it. But they said, there is a delusional belief that the American military would rather mass murder its own citizens than allow them to continue to enjoy the Second Amendment rights. As applied to an arbitrary and as a matter of public policy, a rather unimportant set of weapons. That reveals why it is so difficult for American gun owners and anybody who supports their rights to stay calm when politicians talk about their own vision of common sense gun control. Folks, they're coming after all of our rights. First Amendment rights, the Second Amendment rights. In the USA Today op-ed piece, Swalwell had said, ban assault weapons, buy them back, or go after resistors. And then he said on Thursday, he said, prior proposals to ban assault weapons would leave millions of assault weapons in our communities for decades to come. So here's his solution. They offer, as I said before, a carrot, $1,000, for every weapon that they decide that they will arbitrarily ban. He estimates that might cost $15 billion, but who cares, because we have unlimited money, right? Get back about $15 million. And then they would use the stick on anybody that didn't take that carrot. They would, quote, criminally prosecute anybody who chooses to defy the buyback by keeping their weapons. NBC News reported that in the past, Democrats and gun safety groups have carefully resisted proposals that could be interpreted as gun confiscations, but no more. So that's why Joe Biggs took him on Twitter. He said, so basically, Representative Swalwell wants a war, because that's what you would get. You're out of your effing mind if you think I'll give up my rights and give the government all the power. And then he replies back, and it would be a short war, my friend. The government has nukes, maybe too many of them, but they're legit. In other words, I could use them against you, right? And so then Biggs responds, so our government would nuke its own country in order to take guns? Wow. And he says, don't be so dramatic. You're claiming you need a gun to protect yourself against the government is ludicrous. You know, I've heard that argument many times. Every time I talk about how it is a check on government power, more so than it is a right to defend ourselves or to go hunting or any other legitimate use, it is a check on government power. I always hear people on the left say, oh, well, I don't know really how that's going to work out because we've got bigger weapons. Well, how has it worked out for every one of your asymmetric wars that you've had since World War II? You haven't won a single one of them. That's why these people, the asymmetric warfare centers, are gaming to take on Americans, building replicas of American cities in places like AP Hill, where Joe Biggs was, where we reported that when he was here with us.
Defending the American dream. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. I'm pleased to have us join right now Alex Newman from The New American. You can find his articles at thenewamerican.com. And he's got an interesting article that he wrote about a week or so ago, talking about the UN's involvement, not only in open borders and in the migrant treaties that the United States and Austria and other countries have declined to sign. We understand that the UN is are the ones who are behind this mass surge of people flooding into America and into Europe. But also the new tactic that they're taking in terms of branding any opposition to their program as hate speech and censoring it. Now, this is a full-on spectrum, and we need to understand that it's coming from the usual suspects, the people who in the United States have been the military-industrial complex pushing endless foreign wars, the globalist politicians, the United Nations. They are working to undermine the Second Amendment, the First Amendment. They're working to replace our populations, to create a homogenized global community, global village. You know, it's just even as you look at the caravan people, they're talking about this is a pueblo sin fronteras, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. But basically what they're saying is it's a village without borders. That's what they're trying to create. It is a globalist agenda. So joining us now is Alex Newman. Again, as I point out, you can find him at The New American. Thank you for joining us, Alex.
Hey, David. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Always love to talk to you, and you've got a great article on New American that I want to talk to you about with the UN. But before we do, real quickly, what I was talking about in the last segment, the amazing back and forth and the bold calls now for gun confiscation. We haven't seen that before. They've tried to shy away from that, but now they're getting very bold about it. And as Joe Biggs took on Eric Swalwell from California, Swalwell doubled down and said, well, you know, we've got nuke weapons. We got too many of them, but they're very effective and we can use them. And I've seen some other people as part of that argument. Jason Condor, who is a military vet, but a Democrat politician who's held office and so forth, also taking that on. What do you think about the fact that they're, you know, threatening to go to war with the American people to confiscate our guns?
You know, David, I think this is what they've believed all along. I just think, yes, that the mask is now finally starting to drop. They got a few seats in the House, and so now they think they're all tough, and now they feel comfortable letting the mask drop. But I think it's very telling. You know, they pretend to be concerned about people dying, and yet here they are threatening to massacre massive numbers of innocent people, you know, supposedly as a joke, although I'm not quite sure what's funny about massacring large numbers of innocent people, to confiscate our guns. So really, the reason why they want our guns has nothing to do with preventing deaths. I mean, obviously, that didn't work out very well in Venezuela or in the Soviet Union or in any other place. But the real reason is because they want to abolish the rest of our rights. That's why they hate guns so much. And I think this totalitarian has made that perfectly clear.
And that's all part of what they're trying to do with free speech, too. Very bold in terms of coming at that. But again, you know, Jason Condor said, well, you know, that kind of all went out the window when the government figured out how to drop bombs from airplanes. But OK, I don't think, you know, if we understand history, and I know you understand what happened, you know what happened, the Warsaw Ghetto, you know that they figured out how to drop bombs out of planes in World War One. But that meant that you still had very effective resistance against Nazi occupation throughout World War II. Look at what happened at the Warsaw Ghetto. You had people corralled into an area, and with a hammer, they started getting some weapons from their Nazi captives and captors. And then they eventually tied down a large number of Panzer tanks, over 2,000 Nazi soldiers for a couple of months until they finally burned them out. You can win a battle like that, but you're never going to win a war. And our military hasn't won any of these asymmetric wars since World War II.
That's right. And, you know, I was just in Warsaw and I saw exactly what you just described. I'm actually sitting on the island of Malta right now that was bombed to smithereens by the Nazis and the fascists, the National Socialists. And still, of course, they didn't manage to eliminate their opposition. And, you know, as we realize now very well after Afghanistan, or at least any military planner with any sense should realize, just having really big bombs and being able to call in air support does not guarantee victory. In fact, it's not even necessarily a good sign that you will achieve victory. I mean, if Afghanistan, granted, there's other factors, you know, what is victory? How do we even define it? But clearly, you know, they said, oh, these are just some goat herders. We've got huge bombs and jet planes. Well, the goat herders have done pretty well for themselves. And I suspect the American people would do pretty well as well.
That's right. I mean, you look at the people in Afghanistan, they clearly were outmatched by the British, you know, going back to the 1800s when they fought the Afghan War. And they fought them off and eventually won. They fought off the Soviet Union. You know, we gave them some help with some shoulder fired missiles and so forth, but they're holding their own against the U.S. military now after 17 years. The problem is they can win battles, but they can't change and control a population that doesn't want to be dominated. And that's what our politicians here in America don't understand about the American people. We're not going to be dominated any more than the Afghans are dominated by us, by the Russians, by the British Empire. Right.
Yeah. And, you know, they really misunderestimate a number of people within the federal government who would not go along with this agenda. You know, any command to a military officer, go nuke the American people if they won't give up their guns. Yeah, you know, they'd get laughed at in their face. You know, no patriotic American who took an oath to defend the Constitution is going to go to war against Americans to take their guns. It's ludicrous. So these little congressmen, they like to talk so tough. But when it all comes down to it, they depend on our men and women in police uniforms, our men and women in the military service. And the overwhelming majority of them are good, God-fearing, patriotic, decent Americans who would not turn their guns on American citizens. So I think this guy is writing checks that with his mouth that he couldn't actually cash. And, you know, I just think it's actually good news in an important way because it shows us who we're dealing with. You know, now when we say they really want to confiscate your guns, they say, oh, that's not true. Well, here they are talking about it openly. So now we all know and we all understand what's happening.
Yeah, you got a lot of people who have taken an oath to the Constitution and really mean it. Unlike a lot of these other people, let's talk about the First Amendment aspect of it. You know, it's not just taking an oath to the Constitution. Again, you go back to the Warsaw Ghetto. Just one more comment. When we look at that, the Jewish policemen who collaborated with the Nazis, as soon as they got rid of the Warsaw Ghetto, they summarily executed those people. So that's really kind of what happens to the Quislings and the collaborators of history. But let's talk a little bit about the First Amendment, because we've had a lot of tough talk from McRaven criticizing President Trump for this Jim Acosta stuff. I mean, we've got some real threats against the First Amendment that are completely being ignored or being applauded by these establishment media organizations. But they're all focused now on Jim Acosta. And even as the judge was saying that President Trump had to put him back in, they didn't say really it was a First Amendment issue. They said it was more of a due process. You've got to clarify what the rules are and so forth. I disagree completely with the judge's decision, but the judge wasn't even talking about that. But you've got these people in the military that are pushing for this. And there's a lot of push from a NATO think tank, the Atlantic Council, and others pushing for this control of speech. So they're not just pushing for, don't just have people who are now allied with the Democrats and the establishment, who are former military veterans who are pushing to take the guns. They're also the same people who are anti-Trump, who are pro-globalists, who are pro-Democrat. They're also pushing to take away our First Amendment rights as well.
They are. And, you know, I actually said this in a cover story package we did in The New American months ago when they first came after you guys. I said, you know, in one way, this is really good news, because what it shows us is that even in a rigged marketplace of ideas, you know, they've got their shadow bans, they've got their rigged algorithms to suppress The New American and InfoWars and anybody who tells the truth. Even with all of that, they were still losing the info war, right? Too many people were waking up too quickly for them to feel comfortable on their timeline, their projected trajectory to reach a new world order. And so they had to take it to the next extreme step, which was outright banning you guys, outright kicking you off Facebook, kicking you off YouTube. Now, this new report that I wrote about that comes from the United Nations, it's actually from the UN. I don't know the whole title. It's absolutely asinine. It's the UN Special Rapporteur on Contemporary Forms of Racism, All Discrimination, and the Elimination of All Types of Intolerance, or something ludicrous like that. But I included her picture in the article because people should see. She's got like this shaved head with some dreadlocks popping out from Zambia. And I kid you not. And she wrote this report to the UN Human Rights Council and to the UN General Assembly, both of which are dominated by dictators, saying we need to get rid of the First Amendment. So.
Oh, yeah. Because anything that opposes their policy of open borders is racist and xenophobic. And we're going to talk more about that. And we're going to talk about the UN's charter that the United States and other countries have decided that they're not going to sign. The true source of this, and of course, it's globalism, folks. We'll be right back with Alex Newman. Stay with us. Welcome back. We're talking to Alex Newman from thenewamerican.com. Wanted to talk to him about his article, UN Demands a Ban on Trump-Style Nationalist Populism. Now, again, this is a ban on First Amendment. But, Alex, all of these things are really kind of coming together. You know, as we're looking at the censorship of social media, as we're looking at all the speech codes and political correctness that's being used to control speech and control people, we also understand that the First Amendment rights and shutting those down is about controlling people. You know, it's not just controlling your speech or controlling or helping somebody's feelings and so forth. Just as we always said, gun control is not really about controlling guns. It's about controlling people. All these things are starting to converge together. And so I want to talk a little bit about this, but then I also want to kind of feel you out as to what you think the correct way to proceed. I mean, we got a lot of different options. I'm sure we ought to take all of them at once. But, you know, what do you think is the most promising moving forward in terms of fighting this kind of censorship? Because as we look at the different things that are being thrown out, we got a lot of different things like demonetizing, deplatforming, and this comes into using the banks as a weapon against gun manufacturers and so forth. Even coming after the NRA, they said, well, that is actually a First Amendment, not a Second Amendment issue, because you're trying to silence the NRA. So these are all coming together because it's really part of a broader tyranny. That's why they want to take away both our First Amendment and our Second Amendment rights. But let's talk about where this is coming from, the UN and their tactics, as you laid out in your article.
Sure. Well, thank you so much again, David, for the opportunity to speak on these things. And I encourage people to go read this UN report themselves. It's only, I think, 30 pages or something like that. And if you read it, it really sounds like some kooky left-wing Antifa professor at a university writing this. But when you boil down what they're saying, you know, you can kind of compress the whole report into a few sentences. Racism, intolerance, and discrimination are banned under international conventions, which the UN likes to call international law. Trump-style populism, nationalist populism, and they give a whole bunch of examples, but they specifically narrow in on Trump. They define populism as this concern with elites who are kind of corrupt, who are oppressing the people, or who are at least ruling in defiance of the people. And they say that is, you know, conspiratorial, it's off limits, it's populism. You know, when it's on the left wing, it's not that big of a deal because left-wing populists are normally internationalists. But when it's right-wing populism, then it's all racism, intolerance, and discrimination. And therefore, it is banned under international law. And every government on the face of the planet has an obligation not just to discriminate against that viewpoint, discriminate against people who hold that viewpoint, but to actively wage war on people who hold that viewpoint. They actually call in the report for the creation of hate speech laws all over the world that would criminalize the holding of viewpoints, the speaking of speech in line with things that Trump has said, things that the new Brazilian president Jair Bolsonaro has said, things that the prime minister of Hungary has said, things that Polish officials, Czech officials, Slovak officials, Austrian officials, Italian officials have said. So they're talking about criminalizing opposition to globalism, opposition to mass immigration, and opposition ultimately to this move toward a diabolical new world order. So we need to understand that that's what the agenda is. It's not just to deplatform everybody. It's not just to silence you on Twitter and Facebook and YouTube. It is to make you even criticizing this globalist ideology into a crime, to put you into a prison for believing these things. And, you know, we can see where this goes. If you look in the United Kingdom, for example, or in some of the Scandinavian countries, it's a little bit more advanced. In one of the Scandinavian countries where I spend a lot of time, they have literally investigated the Bible under their hate speech statutes. And they've said that the Bible is technically a violation of their hate speech laws, that it ought to be illegal.
Well, we had the Southern Poverty Law Center stick people onto the Family Research Council. The guy went in there to try to shoot up because they said, you're hateful because you support traditional marriage between one man and one woman.
That's right.
And
that's
right. So because of that, he felt he was justified to go in there and kill people because they were hateful. They were equivalent to Nazis or the Ku Klux Klan or something like that.
That's right. And that's exactly what the UN is doing, too. That's the agenda. Not just silence everybody, make you into a criminal for believing in marriage, for opposing mass immigration, for pointing out some of the theological problems with Islam. A European Court of Human Rights just ruled that it was illegal to criticize the fact that Muhammad, the undisputed fact that Muhammad, their prophet, married a 6-year-old and had sex with her when she was 9. That is now illegal under this European court ruling in Austria. You cannot say that anymore. So we are entering very dangerous territory here where opposition is not just going to be discouraged, it's going to be criminalized. And the U.S. is kind of the last bastion because of the First Amendment. And so this report specifically takes aim at the United States, and we really need to be on guard here.
And of course, the people who are in the vanguard here in the United States trying to do the same type of thing are CNN and people like McRaven, who came out and said what President Trump is saying is false. Why? Because I disagree with him. What he is saying is divisive because I don't agree with him. And so, therefore, he is hateful and he needs to be shut down. And that is the essence of what these people are doing in the name of tolerance, in the name of shutting down racism and xenophobia and everything. They're just saying, I don't agree with you. We can't have this kind of division. We can't have disagreement. We're going to have one voice and it's going to be my voice and we're going to shut you down. That's coming from people like CNN. They're pushing that to try to push people off of various platforms. And Alex, they're going to run this out. Again, they said, this is just the beginning. We can't have division. We had Clint Watts back in November 2017, a former Army officer, former FBI agent, testifying before Congress. Not too many people paid any attention to what he was saying, but he said, we've got to stop false information and division, and we've got to do that by silencing the guns on social media. We've got to silence the organizations that put out anything that disagrees with the military establishment or the globalist agenda, and we got to silence that on social media. That's really what they're after, but they're not going to stop there. They're going to go after monetizing people. They're going to go after, we've turned over the icon website domain stuff. We turned that over under Obama. We turned that over to the UN to manage that. So they can take away people's web domains, just like they can use their banker affiliates to take away people's ability to process payments. We're seeing a massive sweep to censor people.
That's exactly right. And, the point you made about the UN is huge. I think a lot of people, even conservatives, still don't realize that under Obama, we handed over this crucial piece of the Internet's architecture to this global community of stakeholders. Now, the UN has been grooming an agency to regulate, censor, and tax the Internet for many years now, with the support of communist China, Russia, Iran, globalists in the Western world. This is called the International Telecommunications Union. And just a few weeks ago, they re-elected a communist Chinese agent to run this agency. So we know exactly where this is going.
People who are the most censorial of all of them.
Yeah, that's the point, right?
They're going to monitor this just like we put them in charge of human rights and stuff, the Saudis in charge.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And so that's where this is going. And people need to realize, we see all these attacks. They seem unrelated. You have CNN puppets over here. You have UN puppets over here. This all comes back to the deep state. And so you talked a little bit earlier about how do we fight this? I think one of the key things, and there's a lot of things we need to do, but one one of the key things is expose the deep state behind all of this, because that's what they're really worried about. They're worried that we're going to pull back the curtain. People are going to look and say, wow, the emperor has no clothes. It's this little peep squeak. And, you know, that's the one who's calling for censorship, for jailing critics of globalism. Those are the ones who want to take our guns. And, you know, they have a lot of useful idiots, some of whom have no idea what they're doing. But when you expose the deep state, you stop their whole agenda. And so I think that's one of the key things we need to be doing.
You know, when we talk about that, it's pretty obvious that the Democrats don't want free speech and they want to shut down their opposition. I think it's less obvious to a lot of Republicans that we got people like Marco Rubio who don't want to do that as well. You know, when Alex Jones got criticized, got banned by Twitter because he opposed Marco Rubio and so forth. If Marco Rubio really wanted, and the Republicans in general really wanted to do something about this, they would have held hearings to talk about all the people who've been shadow banned. They would have held hearings to talk about InfoWars being absolutely banned. They would have had Alex Jones testifying in Congress rather than using his conversation with Marco Rubio as justification for silencing him. To me, that is the real issue that people don't understand, is how this is the establishment of both parties that are pushing this. The people who want military intervention, the deep state, the military industrial complex, they are both pushing this kind of censorship.
That's exactly right. And, you know, it gets to the heart of what we're saying here, David. You know, the deep state occupies currently the establishment, the leadership of both parties. If you look, you know, the Republicans had control of Congress. What did they promise? They were going to cut spending. They were going to cut taxes. They were going to get rid of funding for Planned Parenthood. They were going to rein in some of these excesses. And what did we get? More of the same, right? More funding for Planned Parenthood, more record spending, more government control of education. So we need to recognize that the deep state is totally bipartisan. Now, there are people within both of the parties, I would say, who are not controlled by this, but the, you know, to, for everybody to put their energy into, oh, we got to elect only Republicans or we got to elect only Democrats, you're just playing into the system, right? You need to expose the deep state, the establishment, the insiders, whatever you want to call this little network that occupies on both sides of the aisle, kind of like two wings of the same bird, that are taking us down the path of censorship, loss of freedom, globalism, open borders. You know, Paul Ryan is the perfect example of this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The guy who fought off any effort to do anything about Obamacare because they'd already handpicked him and Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney is going to be the replacement for McCain up there. But Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney were going to give us Obamacare, Romneycare. He'd already done that in Massachusetts. They're going to give us that one way or the other. Thank you so much for joining us. Alex Newman, thenewamerican.com. And that's our program. Thank you for listening.